Bob Givens was hired by Walt Disney in 1937 and spent a major part of his two-year Disney tenure working on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Soon after, Bob got an offer from Chuck Jones at the Leon Schlesinger studio, where he boarded, designed, and laid out numerous Looney Tunes shorts until Uncle Sam called him to service in World War II. Upon his discharge, Bob resumed a career that ended up spanning well more than half a century and saw him designing, boarding, and laying out not only commercials and theatrical shorts, but a wide array of television shows. Bob concluded his career close to where he started it, with Chuck Jones and Warner Brothers. We spoke in the conference room of the Animation Guild on April 15, 2011. Animation veteran Art Leonardi was also in attendance.
How did you get, I ask this of almost every single person I've interviewed, and that is, how did you get interested in animation to begin with?
Well, I was always interested in drawing, even as a kid, because my mother was a painter, and I started, and I met some people from Disney's early in life. One of them went with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was, what was his name? I can't remember. So I knew people who were at Disney's. That's how I got in the first place.
Right.
I graduated, I went right to Disney.
So right out of high school, boom.
Yeah,
you were there.
Exactly. The same week I graduated. 1941. I'm 1937. Class 1937.
Yeah, my old man bounced from Chenard's over to Disney the year
all
after
of them went
you
to Chenard, yeah. There was a big crop of them. So that's how I got in. I knew Cal Howard. That's who I knew. He was a story man there at the time.
And yeah, there was Cal Howard. Kimball was in there. Most of the guys that were became the Nine Old Men later.
Yeah,
they were all there in the facility.
I started with guys like Ken O'Brien, you know, Alex Notchev, and those people. Dave Swift. Dave was the coffee boy. He used to bring our coffee.
So what was the studio on Hyperion like? Because a lot of old-timers told me, it lost its spirit when it moved.
Yeah, it was great, really, because it was a small crew, you know, and everybody knew everybody, and Walt used to go around there and talk to people. He knew everybody. It was a great place, really.
And so, you left before they moved over to
Yeah,
Burbank.
I did. Yeah, I left there a couple of years later.
And when you worked on Snow White, you were the assistant to...
I was a second assistant to Fred Spencer, who was a great animator. Bolas Jones was first assistant. And then I worked with Grimm and Mark Davis on the Snow White character. You know, we go up there and Mark shows how to draw the thing. And then we would work on different people. I worked on a lot of Fred Moore stuff. We took, you know, moved.
So he worked on the dwarfs?
Yeah, on the dwarfs, yeah. All the dwarfs, yeah. So it was an exciting period. It was the renaissance in the business, really. It went from rubber hose animation to classical
so
stuff
did you,
overnight.
Did you go to the famous party out?
I'll say I did. Fred Moore fell out of the window and landed in the bush. Everybody was drunk. Roddy Thompson was riding a horse into a pool. Oh, God.
Is it true that Walt and Lillian came out
and they
were shocked?
Yeah, they said, we got to get out of here. These degenerates are wrecking the place.
Yeah, I talked to somebody that actually, you know, the facility out there is closed and shuttered up. And
I think they closed it right after we had our party. It was a disaster.
Was that an all-night kind of a deal?
Oh, you know what it was? Well, we were all tense because we'd been working a lot of hours there on Snow White. And when they got through, everybody was ready to, you know.
Kick loose?
And it just all hit the fan at once. And Walt couldn't believe it. They had so many drugs. Well, they were all drugs.
Yeah. And I mean, the stories about that place are legendary.
Marconian, yeah, oh yeah.
And, so you left the next year then, right? You left in 39.
Yeah, I left in 38, yeah, toward almost the end of 38.
So did you work at all on Pinocchio before?
No, because I'd left before they started really getting into gear on it, you know.
Yeah, and you went over to Chuck's unit.
Yeah, Chuck was just starting to direct, yeah.
And, so what was your job? Now, you were telling me earlier, your job over there was pretty much following the projects all the way through. You'd go
well,
from boarding
actually,
to designing.
I started there as a story man, you know.
Yeah.
At Schlesinger. And I did the story thing for about a few months. Then I got into drawing, doing the storyboard. So I worked for Frizz, Tex, and Chuck, you know, 2 weeks on each one. And I did the characters as I did the board, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a great job, you know. I had a... You know, Well, one or the other, about 2 weeks on each one.
And then you got away from animation at that point.
Oh yeah, way away. I never got into it again. I got into the layout and our storyboard thing of it early in the game.
Disney was the last in terms of animation for you.
Yeah, that was actually, I was doing layout there with Gail Gracie on No Hunting. You know, we did that thing. We spent about 8 weeks doing the thing.
So did you discover, this is the thing, I asked this of Andy Gaskell, who ended up being an art director. And he started out an animator and didn't like it.
What was his name?
Andy Gaskell. He directed. Yes. He was art director on The Lion King and a bunch of the later Disney stuff. But he said to me that for him, animation, everything sort of narrowed down. He got frustrated that, you know, he made this choice and that drove him to force him to go to the next step that you'd take.
Yeah.
And he said Frank Thomas told him, gee, I feel exactly the opposite.
Oh,
it opens things up for me. But for him, animation just narrowed things down.
Well, that was their life, you know.
Did you have any visceral negative reactions to animation, saying, well, I like it all right, but I'd rather do this?
No, actually, I wanted to do something else. So when I got Chuck started directing, I went over there, you know. And with a story man, you know. And then from there, there was a guy doing the characters when I got there, a guy named, what's his name? I'm trying to think of it. Charlie Thorson. He was doing the characters, and then he left about 6 months after I got there, so they signed me to do what he was doing, designing characters for the three units.
And you were designing, you designed the early Bugs Bunny?
I did, you did. There was no Bugs Bunny before we did it in 1939. It was two rabbit pictures which had nothing to do with Bugs Bunny.
Right.
So these guys jumped on the bandwagon and had nothing to do with creation of Bugs Bunny. Tex, Mel, and me, we were the creators of Bugs Bunny. 1939, released 1940. And others had nothing to do with Bugs Bunny. It was an accident, really. Because I told Art, Charlie Thorson did the first model sheet for Bugs Hardaway.
Right.
Who did the first one. And he put on that model sheet, was a dumpy looking stupid rabbit. He put on the model sheet Bugs Bunny, meaning possessive, and he didn't know about apostrophes. So it became, that's where the damn thing came so confusing. It was not Bugs Bunny, it was Bugs Hardaway.
They didn't name him Bugs, it was
Bugs Hardaway's
Bugs
Bunny.
It's like Art's Bunny.
Yeah, exactly, it was Bugs Hardaway's Bunny. So he did the first,
so
Chuck did the
Bugs
second.
Bunny.
And if you had done the first, it would have been Bob's Bunny.
No, I'm the unknown co-creator of it, you know.
Yeah.
After I die, they'll find out who really did it.
So you stayed at Warner's until you got drafted then in 1941?
I got drafted, 1941, yeah.
And but you were still there up until when draft notice came through
mail
slot.
And then we went back there after the war. They had to give you a job back. You know?
Right.
So I went back for a couple of years.
Wish they'd do that now.
Oh, now. They go to the psych ward now, and that's the end of it. You know?
But so you missed all of the strike troubles out here.
Yeah.
If you had lasted another two or three months, you would have been in the middle of it.
Oh, I probably would have been out there with the rest of the guys.
Out
picketing?
Yeah. You were telling me that you picketed on the East Coast.
We did. Actually, we made signs, you know, East Coast representative.
And then for most of the war, you were overseas, right? You were...
No, actually, I've spent about a couple of years at Fort Monmouth, and then I went out to Wright Field, you know. And stayed there, and then we ended up out in Culver City with the first motion picture unit. Yeah, they requisitioned us. It had nothing to do with it. We missed the invasion, you know, because of it. Because that outfit I was with, Wright Field, went into the second wave, that they were all slaughtered, you know. My platoon was wiped out, you know. I wasn't with them because they were, we were requisitioned for the Air Force.
Yeah.
No fault of our own. If we tried that, it wouldn't have worked.
Sounds like me.
So I ended up in my own hometown. Well, Frank Thomas was there, Hubley, all those guys.
I had orders canceled for Vietnam. Ended up staying in San Diego, which was fine by me.
Oh, hell yeah.
So
it was all a big accident, really, you know.
And then at the end of the war, you came right back to Warner Brothers.
Right back, yeah.
And you went,
yeah,
did you go right back to Chuck's unit?
Right back, same desk and everything, yeah.
You didn't pick up the same scene that you did.
That'd be funny.
No, we just went back like nothing had happened. You know?
Dust it off and start again.
There's a legendary story of some guy at Disney that came back from the war and they gave him the same scene that he had left.
That's funny.
With, so. Whether it's true or not, who knows?
Well, it probably is, because he picked up right where he left off.
I think it was Mickey and the Beanstalk. They stopped that and didn't do that during the war. They were doing all those training.
I did a
films.
Thing for Chuck Jones a few years ago called Bugs and the Beanstalk Bunny. Chuck Jones.
About so 90s. When you came back, you went right back to storyboarding and designing
storyboarding,
and layout.
Same thing, yeah.
And then how long did you stay at Warner? Did you guys know each other when you
were
both?
Well, we worked
on... He came in years later.
57.
Yeah, I started in 38.
Oh, that's right.
Almost the end of 1938.
You had something to do with getting him over to Warner. Didn't Bob have something to do with getting you over to Warner Brothers in the first place?
Bob
or was
McKimson.
It was Bob McKimson,
yeah,
that's
McKimson,
right.
Yeah, McKimson,
a different Bob.
Yeah, the world's full of Bobs, yeah.
So you stayed straight at Warner Brothers straight through into the late 50s then? Or
well,
did you
actually,
take time out to go
yeah,
other places?
Well, yeah, until about 1952, I think, or 53. And then I worked for everybody else in the world, everything that ever hit this town. Hundreds of different things.
And I guess my questions would be, when you were at Termite Terrace, were there any specific pictures that you thought, that's the one I'm going to be remembered by, that as you look back on it, that...
Well, yeah, there were a lot of them. Well, one of them was Wild Hare.
Yeah.
And the other one was, Frizz's building thing.
Right.
I did all the characters on that one. You know.
I don't remember.
That was a great little picture.
And then you
but,
went...
But, you know, Bob, he's... created a lot of elements that over the time other people have taken
credit
for.
Well, about 20 of those characters are mine. Yeah. Oh, yeah, everybody's jumped on the bandwagon. But the guys who did it, you know, we don't recognize. So I think it's about time they learned the truth of it, you know.
Well, tell a couple of them. So I think it'll get
tell me the truth of a couple of them, especially at Warner's, because I remember talking to some of the old timers that, you know, it was right after you got drafted. About the lockout, that they were out for a week, and then Leon threw in the towel and let him come back, and they all went over to picket at Disney. And
well, we used to go to union meetings when it was dangerous; they'd fire you. So then everybody went to the union. Well, Bill Littlejohn and I were pushing it. You know.
Still goes on.
Yeah, and it was pretty rough times, so they didn't want any unions in Hollywood. So I'm glad we did it, because you'd be working for nothing forever if we didn't do it, you know.
Yeah.
Union strength, you know.
And then, you went to UPA, didn't you? You went to UPA,
I went to UPA
after...
that was
coming
19...
Coming back to Warner's?
About 1947.
So you worked on the first Magoo, and...
Bill Hertz and I designed Magoo. Hubley didn't draw characters, so we designed it together, you know, co-production. And I didn't know that till recently. I'd forgotten about it. Sifa told me about it. But we did it because Hubley didn't draw characters. He was strictly background guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, and then, of course, we had the great animators working on them. And we almost didn't do the second Magoo because of the nearsighted stuff. But we got fan letters. Where's that Magoo? You know. So we made
So it was a reaction from the audience.
We didn't do too many, actually, because he wasn't, you know, he was a great character, but too sophisticated, I think. He wasn't like Bugs, a wise ass, you know, Mickey and all that. It just didn't catch on with the public, you know.
It's one of the first.
And it was great stuff, you know.
When they did the Arabian Nights feature with Magoo, that's one of the first animated features I remember seeing. I saw some of the Disney stuff.
Well, I did, I think, the second one ever. I think Bill did the first one. I did the second one called, what was it? An insurance thing. They're trying to sell Magoo an insurance policy. Trouble Indemnity. I did the layout on that thing. You know, I saw it the other day over at Sifa, and it still looks good. You know,
I think it holds up pretty well.
Yeah, 1948 we did it, yeah. Oh, it was excellent. Jules did the background, Jules and Herb, and it was a beautiful looking picture.
So what caused you to move from, what prompted you to move from Warner Brothers when you came back from the war over to UPA, just because they started up and it sounded good?
Well, they had a thing, they give you a job back for a couple of years, and that ran out. Why did I go? What the hell did I go? I think they laid them off, you know, after a couple of years.
So when you
and so there I went from
got
there
your
to
pink slip, you moved over to UPA.
Well, I went over first with we were doing commercials. Ray Patton, Patrick Parmalee. I was doing commercials when they hired me at UPA. And how they hired me at UPA was that we had a show, Jules and a bunch of us, a group show, painting classes.
Right.
And one of the guys saw the paintings and he called me and hired me. I didn't even think of going there. And I was working for Patton Parmalee, so I put him off. I said, I can't go now. I've got to finish the commercial.
Yeah.
So after I finished it, then I went over there. And I'm glad I did because it was a wonderful experience.
So how long did you stay at UPA?
A couple of years,
You did the first Magoo, or you did the second Magoo.
And the third Magoo and a whole bunch of other Magoos.
Mainly a Magoo specialist, or did you work on some of the other stuff?
Well, the first thing we did was Heckle and Jekyll.
Oh, that's right.
With that. That was
I thought that was Terry Toons. Was that Terry Toons?
Well, they got it from Terry Toons. But then Hubley came up with the Magoo thing, you know, and we went from there.
And what about McBoing Boing? Were you around for
No, but it was actually, it was the guy there that hired me. Saw the paintings down there. He liked my paintings.
Yeah.
Bob Cannon. Bob Cannon was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for, you know, dozen years with him doing characters. So that's how I got into UPA, by not trying. It never occurred to me to go there, you know.
So he just made you an offer and you said, sure, why not?
Well, I was working on, you know, with Patton Parmalee for night. I got to finish the commercial first, so then I went over there.
And you stayed. And what was UPA like as a studio?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was the Renaissance. It was, you know, was something unlike Disney's or anybody else. It was a unique art-filled thing. You know, these people were on the ball. You know, it was art, not just...
Well, there was a lot of the Disney renegades that went up.
Well, they called us the communists over by the river. And they're right. We were a bunch of them were communists, but they were. But who cares? You know, they did some great things.
Steve Basusto.
Oh, Steve, yeah.
Ran the
but
place
you got to admit, that was unique. You know, they weren't trying to do anything like Disney. Warner's was trying to do Disney at first, and they couldn't afford it, so they found another way to do it.
Right.
UPA was unique. It wasn't like any of them.
Yeah.
You know? It was more like Left Bank in Paris, you know, Steinberg and Picasso. And
they had a real run. They had a run. They ran for about a good decade.
Oh, yeah. A couple of decades, yeah.
And Steve sold the studio. And
yeah. And Saperstein bought it out. Later, everybody left.
But you had gone by that time, right? You were...
Well, actually, I went back over there in 1960 to do another Magoo series. Marty Murphy and I went over there. We were doing Magoo.
And were you doing boards and layout?
Boards and layout, yeah.
And that sort of became your specialty then, right?
That's what I did most of the time, yeah. Storyboards, production design.
And then after UPA... You got into television at some point over there.
I got into television early in the game with a commercial out of New York in 1947, the first commercial I ever done. And that was it was directed by Pete Burness.
Yeah.
I did the layout, and a great animator from UPA animated it. And that was early in the game. I think they were black and white in those days.
I don't think there were more than about 50,000 televisions in the entire country at that point.
So. We the UPA bunch did it on the outside, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, one time, and I was working on it, working for UPA and working on the commercial side, I had a bunch of drawings. Paul Julian and I were going through stuff, and Steve caught us, and things had blown away. The wind came up, and he helped us pick up the thing. He said, that looks great. He thought it was one of his pictures. Well, it wasn't. We didn't tell him we're working on a commercial.
No, it's something else.
Yeah.
But if you think it's yours...
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
But those are the days when you got it and you got a salary, no residuals, none of that stuff. Hell, you'd be a billionaire if you got residuals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're lucky to get paid at all. You know?
Art told me about Frizz getting the Pink Panther franchise, which made him a wealthy man.
Oh, yeah.
So. Well, I give credit to David Patty of talking to Blake Edwards, saying they just didn't want to just get a certain amount of money. They wanted a piece of the
pie.
Blake Edwards at that time didn't think
it would amount to much.
Would be just a title, that would be it. But it
few bucks
clicked. So Frizz was sucked right into that profit sharing thing.
Everything's accidental.
Yeah. Well, they didn't let that happen twice, did they?
No.
It happens once by accident, and then they say we're not going to give that kind of money away anymore. So. But you stayed in the game. I stayed in it
until I was almost 90. I retired when I was 65, and then I went back for another 20 years. You know.
You couldn't stay away from it.
No, I couldn't quit showbiz. So I'm glad I did, because it was something, you know, something to do during the day.
Something to
instead
keep
of playing
you busy.
Golf and watching television.
Yeah, well, it's always good to stay busy.
Yeah.
So you went back to UPA in 1960, and after UPA, you were principally at one studio, or?
Where in the hell did I go after that? No, I worked for a lot of them on commercials, lots of commercials for Cascade mostly, about 25 years of great commercials. In fact, the Raid thing is the one that I sold in the first place.
Were the bugs?
60 years ago, yeah. It's still the longest running series of commercials.
Right.
And they're still doing them.
Yeah, I did it on the weekend. I took it on. Barney didn't want to do it, and I said, let me look at it. And I designed the damn thing. And
you designed it and boarded it.
And I mailed it, and I figured, well, we'll never hear from them. And we did it. I did it for 20 years, and then Tex took over. And so now everybody's doing it, different studios.
And that was, you 60 started
years,
that, that was
60
back
years
in, 19, in the 50s?
1953.
My God.
I did the thing on the weekend one time, you know, spec. Never got
now, did that take you back to, did somebody else animate it and you just designed it? Or did
well, we
you
had
end
lot,
up animating
we had a lot
it
of what we did up there at Cascade, there were just Hal Mason and me, and I put Hal in there in the first place. They wanted to replace Alex Lobey, so I got Hal Mason. And he stayed there 25 years. We worked together on these commercials. And we what we would do, we'd hire, we cast it. We had Babbitt, we had O'Brien, all the guys, you know, doing them according to what they did, you know.
So you were like the producer.
And during the strikes there one time, we were the only ones who were busy. We were handing out stuff to all these guys. Art Babbitt and a whole bunch, you know.
That's pretty amazing. They were picking up to keep body and soul together.
Yeah. Well, you know, Cascade had a great premise. They went in there, originally those two guys, and they decided that we're going to be hold our own. We're not going to put up with any nonsense from the agencies. We're going to do this or we're not going to do it at all. And they kept with it. They all did. They said, take it somewhere else if you want. And they didn't, because they had nothing but business as a result. You know, it's good, honest business things, you know.
And that lasted from the early
50s? About 25 years I worked for them, you know.
Now, were you in-house or were you freelance?
I freelanced part of it and then in-house part of the time there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of the commercial houses, getting back to the union thing, that was the last of the Screen Cartoonist Guild. They still had a lot of the commercial houses.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know. I paid dues on both, you know. I had to.
So you were paying dues to 839 and you were paying dues to the Screen Cartoonist Guild.
Exactly.
I think they faded away in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And Jay Ward was the last.
Well, I worked on that thing, too. Well, weekends. I used to do one every weekend, Jay Ward thing. It was a layout problem. There was very little animation, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
in fact,
I augmented
they did a lot
salary.
Of that stuff down in Mexico, I think, didn't
well,
they?
Well, later, yeah. But we did it right here. Most of the guys were freelancing, you know.
Amazing.
Way back in 1950, somewhere around in there.
But I know that he started with Crusader Rabbit.
Yeah. Well, Alex Anderson was his buddy, you know. He came out of that thing in San Francisco. And Alex, I used to pick up stuff from over at the motel here, and I go home and do it. And he got out early because he didn't think his thing was going to go. So he turned it over to Jay, big mistake, and Jay got rich, you know. He did. He got discouraged and went back to San Francisco. The guy that created the whole thing and wrote most of it, Alex Anderson.
That's amazing.
It shows you it's all accidental.
Well, and the other thing is that Jay Ward then sort of did Crusader Rabbit and Rags 2 called Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, yeah, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Sort of the same premise. The little guy, the big guy.
Oh, yeah. They were dumb. Funny, though, very funny.
Oh, yeah.
Very simple.
Oh, yeah.
Really limited animation, but it was great.
Well, he knew where to put the jokes.
Yeah.
I think that was the thing. But
so out of these accidental things grows something world-shaking, you know. Nobody knew it at the time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It was strictly freelance thing.
So, you worked in did you work in commercials as much as you did in strict television?
Oh yeah, the late 40s, 50s, all the way through, even up to the last notch, doing commercials at Warner Bros.
Did you have your stint at Hanna-Barbera? Like
oh yeah, yeah, I was
a
supervisor
else.
There. Well, on and off, you know, you go 6 months at a time over there. Oh, yeah,
season.
I got, well, I went to work for him in 1958. Mike Maltese and I went over from Warner's to work there on the first things, the Flintstones. And I did most of the Augie Doggies, you know.
Huckleberry Hound.
Huckleberry Hound, all that stuff. Those were the best things they did. Simple, you know.
They're the ones that are remembered. Yogi Bear.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All that stuff. So how long were you in Hanna-Barbera?
Well, I worked there for years off and on, whenever they were, you know, up on the hill and over in the other chaplain.
On Cahuenga. Line.
Yeah. Because I left there one time because they were missing payrolls, you know. So I left and went back over TV spots to work on commercials. I was there about a week, and the guy called me, and I said, who's this? He says, Joe. I said, Joe who? He says, Barbera. Hey, kid, he said, I got the money. Come on back. So I quit and went on back. I got a raise by quitting.
That's funny.
Joe said, hey, welcome back.
And there was a lot of that.
Joe who?
Oh, God,
it was funny.
Robert Alvarez, who you probably know. He was a kid probably when you were there.
The name sounds familiar.
Robert Alvarez has sort of long dark hair, but he was an animator at Hanna-Barbera, and he told stories about when he was a kid rummaging around in the trash bins behind Hanna-Barbera and getting yelled at by Joe.
Oh, God, yeah.
What are you doing in there? Get out of there.
Yeah.
And then he later went to work for him.
That's funny there. One time I was walking by the side when Joe came in his new car, and he honked at me, almost ran over me. I said, hey, hold it there. I said, I'll back up and you can run over me, Joe, and then I can sue you. And he laughed. Rah, rah. He was great to work with, though. He had a sense of humor. But Hanna was the opposite, you know.
Hanna was sort of the money guy.
Business guy, yeah. And they were a great team together, though. You know?
Oh, they worked together a long time. Yeah.
Everybody worked at Hanna-Barbera and Disney's. Everybody worked at Disney.
Well, it's like as everybody in features worked at Disney's, everybody in television worked at Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
And a lot of people transferred from one to the other. I mean, it was...
Well, you know, when I first went there in 1958, they were kind of lean time because they weren't doing a whole lot, you know. So one time, that's when I left to go over to TV spots, and payrolls were missing. I thought, hell with that. I got kids. I got to get out of here. So Joe went back to New York, and he sold that thing to CBS. And, man, he came back, and I said, how'd it go back there, Joe? He says, oh, my God, I don't know how we're going to get it done. We got so much to do. It was overnight, you know. Well, television was still kind of young. Man.
Right. Well, we did Rough and Ready. You probably worked on Rough and Ready. Wasn't that
rough
one of the first things?
Rough and
Ready,
oh, yeah, all those things, yeah.
But, because I ran into, when I was a kid, I used to watch Tony Rivera.
Oh, my buddy Tony, yeah.
Yeah, he was laying out a short a week up at his house in Tahunga.
Yeah.
And I was taking piano lessons from his wife, Mary.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd go in and watch him lay out, you know, with the Lucy, blowing up the storyboards and doing the layouts and all that stuff. And he said, you know, there are guys down there that are doing, animating two shorts a week. And getting $500 for each one.
You know what happened? Ken Muse sat right next to me, and I was laying out a picture a week, 500 feet a week, and he was animating at $1 a foot, 100 feet a day.
That's $500 a week, and that was big
money
back
in
1960.
And he'd have a sip of booze, and he'd turn down his hearing aid and animate. I'd hand him a drawing, and I said, wait a minute, I haven't got the drawing done. I hand it to him. 100 feet a day. Jesus Christ.
100 feet a day, because Alvarez, when he was animating later, he said that they all got called in to a meeting, and Bill Hanna yelled at them because Hanna was of the opinion that they were doing too much animation per day. And he said, Bill got it in his head, if you were doing too much, you were really crapping it out.
Yeah.
And so he started yelling at us for doing too much animation because he thought he wasn't getting the quality that he wanted.
Yeah.
He said, and the thing that Bill forgot was that everybody would nod and they'd go out and pick up work elsewhere, and they were still animating.
Well, it was all cycle stuff. You could do it 100 feet a day, you know, a little guy riding a bicycle forever. So that's how they did it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, in the,
very limited
the
animation, you bet.
Cycle them in. But
those were the early days of television.
So you stayed at HB into the 60s.
Well, even the 70s, oh, yeah. I was over there in the 70s.
In the 80s, and were you the head supervisor guy at layout?
Well, they had a bunch of guys supervising. But it was kind of interesting because what I would do is take all the other layout guys' stuff together and coordinate it so that they're on model and all that. It was a fun job, you know?
Yeah.
I worked with Hathcock and some of those guys, the old guys from Disney's.
Yeah.
It was kind of a fun job.
Yeah. So did you have your own home studio you'd work in and work out?
Well, I did a lot of commercials at home, damn right. I bought a little animating desk from Tali Kasana for $10.
Yeah.
Way back. little thing, portable. I must have done hundreds of commercials on that little desk, you know, for $10. Big deal those days.
And just about everybody at that period of time, it seemed like they were all working their day job, and then they would pick up.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
well,
work
you could do it.
And
you know, so many commercials being done later.
Oh, yeah.
You could just call up and get a commercial.
Yeah.
So we all augmenting our salaries.
Well, I talked to my father-in-law, Charlie Downs. He used to He used to do that stuff.
Red Downs. How's he doing, by the way?
He passed away about 2 years ago.
They're all going. He's terrible.
Well, he only made it to 81.
81. Oh, God. But, yeah, Red Downs.
No, he quit at 65. He told somebody off at Warner Brothers.
That's Chuck, yeah.
They laid him off, and he decided to retire.
It's a good reason.
So.
Yeah, Red Downs. Oh, God.
I went to visit him one time with a friend.
Yeah, when he was over on Ventura Boulevard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he unfortunately had to go into a home at a fairly young age because he liked the grape a little too much.
Yeah, well, we all did. It was a big drunk scene at Disney and everywhere else. They're all drunks. But they did some good work between drinks, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How they ever finished Snow White, I'll never know because they're all a bunch of drunk.
Were you into that ceremony back when you were at Disney in the late 30s? Was it afternoons? It was a long afternoon at Tam O'Shanter?
Oh, the Tam O'Shanter. Oh, yeah. Walt's favorite. Yeah. That was his annex over there. Oh, yeah. Dave Swift and I used to go over there all the time.
And Ty went on.
Yeah.
I know Kimball was telling the story about, you know, they challenged Dave to drink like 21 malted shakes from the commissary when they first moved into the new studio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that he ended up lying on the floor in the fetal position because he just couldn't drink anymore and they were pouring them down his...
God, it's amazing. They did such great work and...
Scooted around quite a bit.
God, yeah.
But you had to, I guess. You had to...
Yeah.
Blow
well,
off
it was
steam.
Like a big fraternity. It was a nice atmosphere. Everybody got along.
But you didn't have any qualms about leaving Uncle Walt to move over to Chuck's?
No, because I wanted to do something besides animation. I just didn't like doing animation. You know, being assistant, that was a dull thing, you know.
Yeah.
And it just worked out that way, quite by accident. I didn't really want to go first, and I said,
now, how did you get to, because I know Jones at that time had never been to Disney, so how did you get to his attention, or how did
through Dave Monahan and those guys who were already there, you know, Dick Hogan, you know, they were our roommates at one time, so that's how I found out about it.
So they tipped him off, and he hired you.
Yeah, exactly. He was 25, and I was 20 at the time, I remember, 1938.
So he was the old guy. Was probably the old
guy. Well, there was one old guy there, and that was who had been a pilot at the World War I. And that was Lafayette Escadrille. He was the old guy. He was about 40. We thought, oh, that guy's ancient. 40 years old.
Did he stay in the business, or did
His name was, what the hell was his name? I'm terrible at names. Well, he stayed in for a long time, yeah. But the old guys in those days were about 30 or 40. You know, we were all 19 or 20. Disney's at that time was about 22 years old, average age. Fred Moore was about 25, I think. All young guys.
Yeah, but Fred except got there like in 1930 at the age
God,
of 18.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know, I went to grammar school with Fred Moore up in Lancaster.
Really?
And John Wayne was in that same school with my
really?
Sister. Yep. And I didn't remember him from that movie because I left there when I was about 7. But I found out about it later. Wayne had a crush on my sister, Anna, and she thought he was a wimp. His name was Marion Morrison. She
right.
Says, get out of here, Marion, you big sissy. I told her about it later. She cracked up. She's like, and I was going to tell it to Wayne, who I knew met over there through Algier, but I didn't know it at the time that he was in that school.